This is Mae Brussel. It is the second half of a one-hour broadcast, World Watchers, in case you just picked it up. It is broadcast number 747. I put this on in case you tape it. I hope you do, and take your break at that 1 minute, 30 minutes of broadcast, turn it over, and now we're ready to start for the second half of the program. Getting back to those quotations, Ronald Reagan had said to this particular person, California State Senator James Mills, "Do you understand that? Do you understand what I'm saying? The day of Armageddon isn't far off. Do you understand the significance of that? Libya has now gone communist, and that's a sign that the day of Armageddon is coming." When Mills pointed out that Ethiopia was not among the ungodly nations, Reagan said, "I think it is inevitable. It's necessary to fulfill the prophecy that Ethiopia will be one of the ungodly nations that go against Israel." Then later, he said, "Everything is falling into place," Reagan went on. "It can't be long now. Ezekiel tells us that Gog, G-O-G, the nation that will lead all other powers of darkness against Israel, will come out of the north, and he considers the Soviet Union to be the biblical Gog, G-O-G. The Aryan nations refer to the Zionist group, the Z-O-G, as the evil force, but he has the G-O-G, which is the biblical problem of Soviet Union, and Reagan wants to fight the Soviet Union, the Antichrist, and, of course, Libya." According to this particular person, said that Reagan talked quite a bit about that. The article goes on, "In scanning biblical tests for signs of the times, it would be worrisome enough, but Jerry Falwell and the electronic preachers are adherents to this, and they worked out forms which they call dispensationalism based on the book of Revelation and lurid pictures of tribulation and warfare beginning when the Soviets invade Israel, a nuclear holocaust against the Antichrist Soviets, the rapture whereby good Christians will be rescued and taken to heaven, and so forth." So this alarming story is described, as I say, by Michael Farber, and he says, "Most alarming of all is the part of the doctrine that plays upon nuclear war, because the president believes a nuclear war is the same as Armageddon." Now, when Reagan was up for re-election, just before the election, I did quite a few broadcasts on Jerry Falwell and the born-again Christians in the White House and Ronald Reagan. And I won't do any more on that, except that I remembered that a particular gentleman had included among the stories of Reagan that Libya was a part of the Armageddon. And now it seems the president, for whatever, he may pull the fleet away and then come back another time, or just feel he did as much as he could and be laughing at Gaddafi, or things could keep getting worse. Because worse is what he's told is going to happen, and he's setting the stage for the worst. Now, there is a story in the Washington Times, January the 2nd, titled, "Libyan Link to American Bid for United Kingdom Firm Inflames Debate." That's kind of a confusing title. I don't want to confuse you on it, and I have many articles. In essence, this writing style is really wrong the way it says it. In essence, there was a big conflict in Great Britain, because Margaret Thatcher, the Prime Minister, wanted contracts for the British Helicopter Company, the only one they have, to go into the hands of American Business Consortium. And because of that, one of her ministers, one of the members of the defense minister, Michael Heseltine, resigned from the Thatcher group because he felt that the Westland, that's the British Helicopter Company, should be helped out by contracts with European countries in France, in Germany, and Italy, that all of the British dependence is upon America. And he wanted an English consortium of General Electric Company and also the Messerschmitt and Blohm and the German aerospace and France and Italy to rival the American company. And the American company that got the contract was Sikorsky, which is United Technology. Now, George Bush used to be chairman of United Technology. He's still close, not George Bush, Alexander Haig. It's even worse, and he's still close to United Technology. And, of course, Haig is a protege of Fritz Kramer, co-partner back there in Washington with Daniel Graham of Star Wars. And United Technology didn't, in fact, win the contract. But United Technology is joined in the bid. It was a partnership bid by Fiat of Italy, the company which is partially owned by Libya. Gaddafi owns 13% of fiat, which is interesting, and I haven't seen this in many other papers. Now, fiat is Mr. Angelli, A-N-G-E-L-L-I. Angelli is one of the executives of Kissinger Associates. He also is a Knight of Malta, and he's the head of the fiat company, of which Gaddafi owns this huge percentage, 13% of the Italian auto business. So that could partly explain why Mr. Wilson from the Vatican is running down for Agnelli or so forth with their investments, or talking over what Ronald Reagan's going to do and whether it will or will not hurt Gaddafi. It may be a street theater fighting kind of an instant where behind the scenes they know full well what they're doing, but they're keeping us in the dark. In fact, the Sikorsky company, which is United Technology, and Agnelli did get the contract, and this article says it was controversial because it goes on to say the British feel almost as strongly about Colonel Gaddafi and his Libyan government as the Americans do. So they had a confrontation and a death at the Libyan embassy in 1983. So the revelations that Libya owns 13% of the fiat, and fiat just won the bid for the British helicopters, caused quite a stir, but it is still settled down, and the British accepted, and Gaddafi has a hunk of the contract to make British helicopters. The article goes on, the Libyan connection was yesterday dismissed as a red herring by the Department of Trade and Industry, which refused to criticize the United Technology fiat bid. So you have Haig and Kissinger and Agnelli, this close relationship, and a hunk of the firm owned by Gaddafi, and they would go on and make the helicopters for Great Britain. The article goes on, fiat already owns the engines of the Tornado fighter bomber, and the Libyan connection may have swung the decision of Mr. Hazeltine to leave the department there, he argued, because maybe he didn't feel that Gaddafi's money or interest should be tied up into British helicopters and so forth. The article goes on, the essential concern is future orders. Sikorsky, which is United Technology, wants Westland to push sales of their Black Hawk military helicopter, and it has to do with weapon making in Europe and England, but the important thing is that the people that won were United Technology and Agnelli, and Mr. Gaddafi owns this hunk of fiat. So all this talk about anger or disagreements with each other is a lot of street theater. There's more going on than we know about. As I say, Mr. Agnelli of Fiat is a Knight of Malta, as is William Wilson. And Wilson was down there with Gaddafi, and Gaddafi is close to the Italian government. As a matter of fact, I might have mentioned before, when Aja was promised he'd have immunity if he blamed the shooting on the Pope as a Bulgarian KGB story, that he would have protection in Libya. So Frank Turpel worked in Libya with Edwin Wilson and came right from the CIA, and Frank Turpel worked with Aja. So Gaddafi is much thicker into this circle than people want to believe. Therefore, are placing their ships there this week, has to be for a lot of other reasons. And Ronald Reagan is provoking a scene which, like Mr. Anthony Sutton says, war and revolution, confrontation, set situations up. We'll shoot a few, you shoot a few, for whatever reasons. Now, there's an article January the 9th, 1986, by Jack Anderson, that Muammar Gaddafi went to Vienna to buy 100 plastic handguns. That was in January of this year, this great terrorist could go to Vienna, and these handguns are plastic that are difficult for airport security to detect. Jack Anderson said the pistols are made in Austria, where Gaddafi-supported terrorists shot the Vienna airport during Christmas week. This is crazy. It's Christmas, they were supposed to be having a part of shooting down, and within a few days, by January the 9th, it turns out Gaddafi has access to these plastic pistols that he can give to terrorists throughout the Middle East. The handgun in question is the Glock 17, a 9mm pistol invented and manufactured by Gaston Glock in the village of Deutsch Wagram outside Vienna. It is accurate, reliable, hardened plastic, frighteningly easy to smuggle into airports, and Austria's past dealings with Gaddafi suggest that the obvious danger of such a sale would not be enough to bring government intervention. It was the first European country in 9 years to entertain Gaddafi on an official state visit in 1982. This is when Helene von Damm, the secretary, to Ronald Reagan all those years, our ambassador entertains Gaddafi. He's entertained over in Austria. The article goes on to use the platform there provided by the Austrians in Vienna to denounce Ronald Reagan as a terrorist and a destructive person. The Austrians were rewarded for their hospitality and so forth, he said, when towards the Arab extremists in 1981 when Palestinian terrorists assassinated Heinz Nittel, a prominent Austrian Jew and a close friend of Chancellor Bruno Kreisky. Kreisky complained to the PLO and Arafat and pointed the finger to Abu Nidal and offered to send anti-terrorist specialists to Vienna and to the Austrian police, but the Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, learned that two Palestinians had actually been sent to assassinate Anwar Sadat in Vienna and to kill Kreisky, and that they weren't sent for the other purposes. So they happened to kill a Jew, a close friend of the chancellor. Instead, what a confusion of identity, of trying to get Sadat, who got it later, and to kill the chancellor, but they did get the Jew and not the other two. Another article out of the Houston Post from a good friend and long subscriber said, Brown and Root involved firm is studying the order to build in Libya. And many of you probably saw this past year. Brown and Root is a large firm that does cement and construction work that supposedly could put cement around Vietnam, around the world three or four times for the profits they made. I believe Lady Bird Johnson is on the board of Brown and Root, and George de Morenschild, Lee Harvey Oswald's contact, was getting his paychecks and checking into Brown and Root as his cover for some espionage when he was working with Lee Harvey Oswald, and he'd go to Brown and Root in Houston, Texas. Now, this huge firm, Brown and Root, was making plans. The president had ordered the American companies out of Libya, but they were revising their plans, and I understand that they got permission where others didn't have it, and the company was building a $20 billion water pipeline project that would transport water from under the desert, 1,200 miles to Tripoli, and other populous areas. So the president's closest advisor, his closest personal advisor, Mr. William Wilson, has the Pennzoil over in Libya, and Brown and Root out of Houston, Texas, were willing or are willing or have started a $20 billion water pipeline under the desert to make Gaddafi more profitable and grow crops and so forth. Now, Brown and Root, as I understand, were not affected by the orders for their irrigation project. It's one company that was allowed to go through. The president's orders were going to determine how much compliance they had to have, and they said the construction firm, Brown and Root, already has operations in Libya that include oil field service work, and they serve as engineers and project managers on water. At the present time, we have less than 20 citizens in Libya. This was as of January 1986, but Mr. Wilson has the Pennzoil, and the Brown and Root, very heavy in the Defense Department and to the CIA and government agencies, has a project for $20 billion in water. If Gaddafi's such a terrorist, dry him up. Why build water plants for Gaddafi? Another article, December 13, 1985, about the shootout in Rome and Vienna, because this is one of the reasons Ronald Reagan has for setting up a confrontation, or the front reason. The article says, 3 days before the attack on the airport in Rome and Vienna, airlines around the world were warned that a group of Libyan-backed terrorists were sent to Europe that would have actions for the holidays, and information was made available by intelligence and police organizations, including Interpol, that a wave of terrorist hijackings and terrorist operations would take place. This was the New York Times, December 31st, 1985, that there were warnings, and the Italian named Madrid as a possible problem, Athens, Nicosia, Cyprus as possible targets. But Interpol knew that there were a group of Arabs that were going to create a situation, and of course the airports weren't any more secure. The lobby, you can't help but getting through the lines. In some ways, you should be able to detect these terrorists. The article from the New York Times said that they were told that it was a breakaway faction of the PLO headed by Abu Nidal. And that name is going around like Carlos the Jackal, and he's supposed to be living in Libya, supported by Gaddafi, and this was the excuse for getting angry at Gaddafi because of Abu Naydel. But as I will point out in a few minutes, he also has been in the United States just recently, like Stefano Della Calle. We have no shortage of terrorists. They come and go. And he was here for heart surgery earlier when he wasn't such a bad terrorist, but he was here for facial surgery after he was a bad terrorist. And we are blowing away the chances for peace in the Middle East by responding to situations that don't make sense. And certain agents working with each other have a predictable route that is told ahead of time. To make the record straight, they said that they knew these events were going to take place so that the agencies can clear themselves and their consciences at the same time. January the 10th, 1986, another article sent from a friend in New York, friends in New York, who subscribed to the tapes. These broadcasts go out by cassette, and many people who hear them and receive them send me these marvelous articles. This one is about Gaddafi denouncing Reagan and denounces what Reagan is doing. And as I say, this was January of this year, and Muammar Gaddafi had a news conference. He said the United States is a stinking, rotten crusader, and he threatened Mediterranean security, and he does not want the United States there threatening this security, and he wants to end their military presence in the region. Libya will not falter an inch in its support of the Palestinian people. And he, Libyan leader, said that his country was not responsible for the Palestinian attack in Rome and Vienna that took 15 lives. And he asked, he said the Reagan administration called him flaky. He asked what that meant. He didn't know what it meant. And he said, I never learned that Reagan was a psychologist or a neurologist. I thought he was a useless actor. Now, Gaddafi made an appeal to Interpol to come in and stop this terrorism. He said in an apparent effort to drive a wedge between the Europeans and the United States, the Libyan leader called in Western ambassadors Wednesday night and reassured them that he opposes terrorism. He called for strengthening Interpol, the Paris-based international police agency that said he supported the extradition of suspected terrorists. Now, it's interesting that Interpol gave warning a few days or weeks before this was the excuse for putting our fleet over there in the Mediterranean, going after Gaddafi. The days before the airport incidences, Interpol was warned. And Gaddafi isn't criticizing Interpol for naming him or Abu Naydel or the PLO. They had warning that some terrorism was going to take place. And on the other hand, he's arguing to strengthen Interpol so that he won't be the fall guy. So it's interesting that January the 10th, he's asking for Interpol to have more power because if they found out who was doing this violence, then, as I say, he wouldn't be blamed. Another story in the New York Times, December 28th, Dutch police said Interpol issued a warning on possible terrorist attacks at airport. So on the one hand, as I say, the Interpol is saying these things will happen. And Gaddafi is saying, I wish Interpol would do more work. And therefore, I believe that even though they had indication that violence was going to happen, that maybe Gaddafi didn't know that much about it or until after it happened. And he keeps getting the blame. Another story in the San Jose Mercury, November 25th. The United States State Department was informed in advance of the plans to assault the hijacked Egypt Air aircraft in Malta, and offered to contribute U.S. forces if needed. Now, this is another act of terrorism, not the one at the airport in Rome or Vienna. This had to do with the Egypt aircraft that was hijacked. And again, there's information that they knew in advance. And there's a quotation here, asked whether U.S. cooperation extended when helping the Egyptian commandos who reportedly had flown to the airport on two U.S.-made Egyptian Air Force C-130 transports, George Shultz said, it's none of your business at this point. The U.S. intervened, but again, this story says that the U.S. knew in advance of the plans to assault the hijacked aircraft, and that evidently they do get warnings, but it's something that must be wanted to happen. It happens. And is it, like Anthony Sutton says, a setting up of war and revolution back and forth? That seems to be working very well. Another article of January the 14th, 1986, terrorist Abu Nidal was in the United States. This is the one that said he slipped into the United States for a heart operation in 1977, and he recently had plastic surgery in the United States. He's loyal to Muammar Gaddafi, but when he wants to get to the United States for medical reasons, he moves freely, according to this article, even to the United States, where plastic surgery was so perfect that his own wife failed to identify him. She had him talk to her because she didn't identify him from the plastic surgery that was done in the United States to save his face. Now, he's been charged with a lot of plans. One, he tried to assassinate Mr. Yasser Arafat in 1974. Nidal took refuge in Baghdad, and the Iraqi government helped him, and he helped set up Palestinian death squads. In 1980, the Iraqi president Hussein kicked him out, but the Syrians accepted him, and he was in a Damascus hotel and murdered four hostages 4 years later in Iraq. In May 81, he claimed credit for the murder of Heinz Nittel, that the fellow I talked about, the chairman of the Austro-Israeli Society, a personal friend of Austrian Chancellor Kresge, Bruno Kresge. He did that in Vienna. In August 81, his thugs attacked the synagogue in Vienna, killing two persons. June 3, 82, his group wounded Israeli's ambassador Shlomo Argov, which was the excuse for the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, a subject I did a lot of broadcasts on in June 82. And after that, shortly after that, Alexander Haig was fired as Secretary of State. He'd given the green light to Israel to go in and wipe out a lot of people in Lebanon, and he also approved of the Argentine military dictatorship and the Falkland War. At that point, Alexander Haig was out, but his company, the United Technology, working along with the Fiat, 13% owned by Gaddafi, is getting the contracts today to make the helicopters for Great Britain. So Haig still has a finger in this international scene in ways that we don't know how much stock he has in United Technology, but being a former president, I'm sure it's quite a bit. Nidal, in August of 82, used machine gun pistols and grenades and attacked a defenseless person or patrons of his Jewish restaurant in Paris. Six were killed, two Americans. Now, I cite these activities because this person, Abu Nidal, is somebody who's been linked to not only to the Israeli Mossad, who acts as a provocateur, as an excuse for the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, but who can come to the United States to get surgery and get his face changed and then leave to go about doing what he's doing. And the excuse for the fleets in the Mediterranean, the excuses are that Nidal is a close friend of Gaddafi. Now, in the book Stefano Della Calle, which is an interesting book on terrorism, published by the Anarchy magazine in London, there's a story of one of the world's most dangerous terrorists. And Della Calle, according to recent documents, has been close to the United States. He's been in and out of Miami, and I'll cite some sources if I have time this evening or next week on his role, of course, with Licio Gelli, with the P2, with the Bologna bombing. Ronald Reagan's excuse for all of the money we're spending, all the time we're spending, the news media, people going on and on about Libya, they get so absorbed into it. It isn't terrorists we're worried about. Abu Nidal comes to the United States. Stefano Della Calle comes to the United States. Francisco Pazienza was talking about his visits here to the United States. We have terrorists that are protected from World War II and current members of death squads that are protected, although one was arrested last week, and I'll go into that in a little bit, in the story of Michael Sindona. But we have articles, The Murderous Abu Nidal. It's out of the Los Angeles Times, January the 1st, 1986. His viciousness should lead us to try to deal with Arafat. Because Nidal is vicious, we should deal with Arafat. And then I'd say the hypocrisy that we don't even want to know, who killed young people in Atlanta, the Atlanta killings, and we have these serial murders going on all over the United States, women, prostitutes, and gays, and black children, these death squads that are wiping sections of our population out, and yet we zero in, like if it's Adolf Hitler or Abu Nidal, or for long, long, many years it was Carlos the Jackal, until it His role with the CIA was practically without any doubt written up and documented over and over again. Newsweek, January 13th, as a story for sheer viciousness. Abu Nidal had few rivals in the underworld of terrorism. And as I say, we have plenty. The Jim Jones story with the CIA and our Defense Department is just as much terrorism. We select and decide the news stories and create. Sure, Nidal is bad, but is he used by the Mossad, as the allegations go, to set off terrorism in the Middle East that the Israelis can invade Lebanon? Now, there's another factor that's been brewing in the Middle East, and I wonder if this behavior and what's going on with Ronald Reagan and Gaddafi is going to lead to something more complicated, but the door is open and William Wilson can discuss it with Gaddafi and let this thing go to a certain point, and the Arabs then react on the side of Gaddafi. The B'nai B'rith Messenger had one article just this past week, but I've read it in two or three other newspaper articles that Israel is very worried about Syria. And one article that I have here, the possibility of aggressive action by Syria continues to trouble Israel and itself. The political and military leaders are concerned. They have to look at this staging. Evidently, Syria is putting weapons and visible signs of war and attack on the border and making Israel very nervous. Defense Minister Yitzhak Rabin told the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Security Commission that recent aggressive statements by the Syrian president, Assad, require them to be on the alert at all time to prevent an undesired war. Now, I'm wondering if there's a chance that stirring up the Arabs by Ronald Reagan will cause the Arabs to line up with Gaddafi, who hates Israel, and create the excuse for Syria to go into Israel. It'll be interesting to see if that happens, but Syria and Gaddafi are very close, and if they get enough Arabs stirred up, Gaddafi can't hurt Israel from that far away, but certainly Syria can, and that may be the next step. Now, I have a breakdown of several organizations that work with the United States Defense Department and with Gaddafi and suggest that we have set him up for what I call that war revolution, that contra action, where the people there in his military are given the training by us, and then we step in because they are attacking us and we've gone into their territory. And it is a total diversion from all the many things that are troubling this country right now with the deficit and the budget and the trade imbalance. I don't have to list them all. Now, there's a newspaper, a newsletter called Investigative Leads. And interestingly enough, and because the LaRouches are so much in the news, this is published by Lyndon LaRouche, and it was published in December of 1982, 3.5 years ago. And I'm not reading the opinions of the authors of this article. I'm reading the information that is available. They give their sources of information, and it has to do with Gaddafi in Libya. It has to do with a company in Denver, Colorado, called Resource Dynamics. And that company in Denver has three branches, one in Madrid, one in Spain, and one in Atlanta, Georgia. And they trained, in 1982, they were training 127 Libyans to work for the Libyan Defense Department inside of Libya to, in quotes, stir up a reaction of Muammar Gaddafi, that it was to, these are the words, to unleash the Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi, training these people and trained through Lockheed and the corporations to unleash Gaddafi, and that in turn could bring on the Middle East Armageddon that Reagan thinks is necessary and keeps the war business employed and assured of a lot of activity and testing their weapons, just as Hanford, Oregon, or the atomic tests test our new weapons and test them on Gaddafi. I see our time is up. I can't even begin to go into this. Next week, I'll try to start with a little bit more on Libya and Resource Dynamics as a warming Gaddafi up and the international connections of these people to the Republican and Democratic Party and the way we build up the military in Libya so that it's there to respond when Reagan gets into the waters close to where Gaddafi is. But the hour is up now, so I'll do a little more on this next week. and then get into some other matters like Michele Sindona and the Waldheim story, running for president of Austria with his Nazi past. A lot of interesting things in the news, but I will continue a little bit on Libya. And in the meantime, this is Mae Brussel. I will be back with you next week. Thanks for the articles. Thanks for the books and all the material you keep sending me.